And certainly continuing to evidence that by doing the right thing, you can create value. So it's
Okay.
not just about doing the right thing because you have to. It's doing the right thing and making a business case. And I think continuing to try and drive that and demonstrate that is going to be the key focus for the next.
Welcome to Big Time Sustainability.
Big Time Sustainability is brought to you by Center for Big Synergy, and it is a United Nations Global Goals initiative.
On this show, global leaders and changemakers tell us how they are combating major challenges like climate change, loss of biodiversity, hunger, poverty, inequality, and many more.
Big Time Sustainability aims to inspire all of us to follow these leaders and act with urgency to create a more sustainable world.
If you are a changemaker or know someone who is making a big difference in their community or globally and should be on this show, please email us at podcast@thebigsynergy.org or visit www.thebigsynergy.org.
Hello everyone, welcome to Big Time Sustainability. This is your host, Dr. Ragini G. Roy. Today with us, we have Gareth Quinn from Smurfit Kappa. Welcome, Gareth.
Morning, Regina.
Hi. Gareth, just starting off, it was amazing to know your journey so far. You started really young and then you have been in the company and you have grown to be a leader in sustainability. Would you share your journey so far with our audience and how you have evolved to become one?
Yeah, well, I think you might want to qualify being a leader, but I'll take the praise. Thank you. I suppose just for some background, I work for Smurfit Kappa Packaging, who'd be the largest producer of cardboard boxes in Europe and the only producer in North and South America in pan-regional, so from Canada down to Chile and Argentina. So basically, when you get boxes on e-commerce or in that deliver your shopping or that is in the retailer, we typically are one of those, the main producer of that. So I guess in terms of getting into sustainability, I'm in my 40s, I'm 44. In 1980s in Ireland, I'm from Ireland, I would say that there was a bit of focus put on pollution, on the need for recycling, on the need for protecting the environment through the 1980s and 1990s when I was in school. So you kind of had that natural, you should do the right thing messaging that was coming through.
Right.
Which may I say now with my two young kids who are 10 and 12 is much,
it's just
much,
become,
much,
yeah, ever, oh, so important a, now.
It's another level now. You can't do anything without your kids scrutinizing and why did you do that? And, you know, why would we not do this? So I guess growing up in Ireland, there was a focus on it in the school system. So naturally then I live by the sea, so you kind of naturally have that appreciation for I guess the negative impacts of pollution as well as the benefits of having that beautiful amenity on your doorstep. So I think it kind of had that natural growing up, being exposed to it, being exposed to what was good, what was not good. And then when at the age of 20, I joined Smurfit Kappa on the graduate program. I'm 20, 23, going into my 24th year with the company. And I guess the company itself is inherently sustainable because we can't make new boxes unless we have old boxes. So,
right.
You know, there are, at the moment, you can see that the world is focused on becoming more circular, and that's a good thing. And our business started being circular, as in you could not make a box if you didn't have an old box to turn it back into a new one. So I guess in ways we've been fortunate in that the business model and the structure of our business has just naturally put us in that circular place, which we've been doing since 1930s. So 90 years in operation. I guess after 16 years in operations with the company, I started to work in investor relations, which was working with our investors, so the people who own the company, because we're a FTSE 100 publicly listed company. And you could see that the attention on sustainability was just growing and growing and growing. And on not just on risk and compliance, but also on opportunity, as in you could see that investors were kind of saying, if you could demonstrate the following, if you could evidence the following, we would buy more of your stock. And you say, well, that's a great opportunity. It's not just about a stick and you must do this or else you'll be punished. It was actually more opportunity focused. So I guess we saw an opportunity as a company to create a new role almost 2.5 years ago that I took on, which is the Chief Sustainability Officer, to just look at trying to get as much value as we can for the business. And I know that sounds a little bit Machiavellian, but ultimately, as a company, can you do the right thing and make money? I said, I guess the combination that we're looking to achieve. And so that's a, I guess, a bit of a snapshot on my journey.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Garrett. Once you have taken up this role, have you implemented some new strategies that are being rolled out at the moment? Something which we all can look forward to, where Smurfit Kappa is going ahead in the future? Are you leading from on your on from your side?
I'd like to think so. I would say we're in an okay place. I don't think we'll ever feel we've achieved or reached what we planned on doing. You have to keep raising the bar. But can we show that we've started or delivered on certain strategies? I think definitely. We did a billion euros of a green bond 2 years ago, which was a when you look at the purpose of a green bond, it was based on our circular business model. But also we so it was I guess reflecting the sustainable nature of our business, but we also received the lowest coupon. So the interest rate that we got for our bond was the lowest ever for a company of our credit rating. So again, you can see that there's this business case behind being a more sustainable company, and you get the benefit as a company from doing that. So I think we with the green bond is one to look at. I think our net zero strategy, so trying to put a bit more make our plans a bit more tangible, because it's very hard to have specific plans beyond maybe 5 years, because technology is going to change, returns are going to change. So trying to, how do you develop a net zero plan that's credible when you don't know, with any degree of confidence beyond 5 years out? So that's something which I believe we've progressed quite well. We got SBTi approval in terms of having third-party validation on our climate targets. We've done a lot of work on our biodiversity, which we will continue to do in the future, which will hopefully be aligned with TNFD in due course. And then working with customers and investors, making our employees more aware of this topic, because it's a topic that can be quite complex, it can be quite contradictory, and you've got all these different bits of information going on in the world, whether it's from the news or social media, your personal experience. And so sometimes it's hard to reconcile all of these different messages. So what we're trying to do internally is create a kind of a simple messaging around what sustainability means for Smurfit Kappa, how you can engage, what are the negative things that we might do that you need to be aware of, and what we're doing to reduce them, and what are the positive things that we're doing, and what and how you can be aware of them, and how we're trying to enhance them.
Brilliant. Again, from a layman's point of view, of course, you are the biggest one of the packaging companies. So in terms of your supply chain and how you continue to be sustainable, so the consumer demand tends to increase as we go along. We are going to become 8 billion soon. So how do you actually balance this? Because of course, there has been a lot of criticism about sustainable forest management, with the biodiversity being impacted, in the sector. So with the global demand increasing, and how do you think you guys can balance that as a company and supply the global market and yet ensure that biodiversity and is maintained and forests are protected and we have a planet which can protect us rather than we protecting it. So yes, yeah.
Well, essentially, there's two aspects there, which is what we can do as a company, and then specific to our world, and then what our industry needs to do. So we often talk about how Smurfit Kappa can do the right things, but if the rest of the industry globally doesn't, then our industry runs the risk of not looking, or not even looking, being negatively perceived, I suppose, for the reasons you've outlined. So I guess there's two things. The latter part is about advocating for best practice in our industry. So basically saying, chain of custody certification, typically FSC, that is what we prioritize as a company. And we would love the world to be accredited to kind of best in class standards, which then mean that any risk of negative impacts on biodiversity, negative impacts on ecosystems, that they are all managed through third party validation to say, actually, no, you're not. You are not negatively impacting any of these variables. And so for those who would be familiar with these certification standards, they are very comprehensive. They are not just about, looking at a tree and how you grow a tree and looking at the acre that you grow a tree in. They look at local water systems, they look at your impact in local communities, they look at your impact on biodiversity. So it's not just about how you grow a tree, it's about your broader ecosystem impact. And you will not be certified if you do not satisfy those requirements. So that is how we as a company make sure that we are part of the solution, not part of the problem. And I guess what we advocate is for the industry to embrace these certification standards, because they reduce the risk of any negative deforestation. And I guess typically deforestation, and the statistics are out there from a variety of sources, they're not linked to the forestry industry. They're typically linked to agri
That's
and
right.
quality
Yes.
and kind of related commodities. So we know that our industry and the sector globally has a relatively small part to play in it, but still we're saying, yeah, let's make it 100% rather than 90% plus. Let's make sure that the world is embracing chain of custody certification, and that is something we take great pride in Smurfit Kappa with leading FSC certification across our business.
So Garrett, going forward, in your sector and businesses you work with, why do you think major businesses are taking a bit longer than usual to strike net zero, go to net zero, considering what we had a discussion at COP that we really need that 1.5 degree to be met? What do you think is actually hindering their progress? Is it more profit related shareholders, or it's actually genuine factors like lack of new technology, regulation, infrastructure?
I think it really depends on the industry, and then it also depends on the company. If you look at light industry, your ability to decarbonize quicker is probably much clearer. The further up that ramp you go in terms of high energy intensity, where you need these heat, that's where certain technologies that exist today just are either way too expensive or potentially not widely available. So I think when you're at the lower end of energy intensity, hopefully then if you work for a company or you invest in a company that is sustainably minded, and you can see that in the values and the cultures of the leadership, hopefully they should be well on track and doing the right thing. If they're not, then that's probably where, to your point, you can challenge them and say, hey, you should be. And we can see regulation is coming to drive that anyway. When you look at going further up that curve, what you tend to find is, to your point, you'll find that in some instances, you look at green hydrogen, that is not commercially available or scalable today. But it is highly possible and probable that it will be in the next 5 to 10 years. So we're trying to look around corners to say, okay, so if that becomes available, what would it mean for the assets that we have that currently burn natural gas? So natural gas being the most efficient source today for a lot of our mills, because we mightn't have access to things like biomass in certain regions. We'll say, okay, well, then what is the alternative? Green hydrogen is an alternative, not currently available. So let's do controlled trials to make sure that we understand the impact on our asset base. And that's something we've done in France, where in a consortium with ENGIE and Centrax and Siemens and a lot of universities across Europe, we have successfully trialed hydrogen in an energy plant on our site in Saya in France. So I think, you know, it depends on where you are in terms of that energy intensity. And then you could, you know, in certain geographies, you could move to being 100% electric and you could invest in electric boilers. But the cost of electricity compared to the current cost of alternative fuels would mean you would be at a significant commercial disadvantage.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of the commercial reality. There's a little bit of technological availability. But I think there are plenty of companies which you could potentially say, hey, you're not doing enough today. You know, whereas we have reduced our absolute emissions since 2005 by over 40%. So we've already done that by the end of 2022. And we have ambitions to do more by the end of 2030. So hopefully, you know, for those who are listening to this, you can see that we are one of those companies that is acting. Our data is independently assured by KPMG, and our targets have been validated by the Science Based Targets Initiative.
And do you see this across your sector? Others are also doing the right thing, or there are companies?
Yes. Yes, I guess is the yes is the simple answer. When you look at Europe, I would say most of the major players in our industry in Europe would be SBTi approved. And then, well, of the bigger players, you look to different parts of the world, it's probably a little bit more mixed, which is probably what the audience might expect, is that Europe tends to be a bit more ambitious and aggressive. And then you look in other parts of the world where it's not the same. But we can still see how in other parts of the world there is SBTi activity, which is good. But ultimately, SBTi is one of many, many, many ways that you try and demonstrate that you're doing the right thing. I think ultimately, action and evidence of action is the most important thing. So not necessarily certification and standards. They're all important. They are all important. But what we don't want to become is a bunch of reporters and compliance people. What we need is action. So back to your question on COP is we need action, but we need to make sure when people say they're acting that you can prove it. So that's where I think that level of third party review, whether it's SBTi or through an auditor reviewing your data, is going to be important. But if you as a company can demonstrate and you know that you are reducing your carbon footprint, then you've nothing to be worried about. So it is all kind of circular, where if you're sitting there going, ah, it's too expensive, it's not a priority, I'm focusing on new business development, then yeah, there's a chance that this is going to get you, but hopefully you can actually turn that into a business opportunity.
Sure. Yeah, there's a huge commercial benefit at the end of the day to do the right thing. And going to the commercial benefit, Garrett, so do you think shareholders in your sector, beyond your sector, are ready to take the hit, considering you will have to invest in sustainable policies, practices across the sector and in various business functions? Are they ready when you interact with your shareholders and beyond? There's a lot of shareholder activism everywhere, as we always listen to and know. But when it really matters to how much they get back from the investment they have done, is it the right, are they ready for that?
Well, I think again, we're probably at risk of saying there's only one way, which is take a hit to do the right thing, and that's not true. You know, we as a company, we've been focused on doing the right thing and making returns,
Returns,
and
yeah.
I think that's the way you need to be thinking, because if you go too far down one of them, you will get into trouble. And so
Yes, yeah.
if you can continue to demonstrate that you can do both, I think you're in a much better place. And So I don't think that we experience investors saying, hey, we're willing to take a dilution or a reduction in your margin because of what you're doing on sustainability. They see that we're performing financially and we're performing across our material sustainability topics. So I don't sense there's a hit. And our experience as well, when we did an equity raise in recent years, we did highlight how 150 to 200 million of our strategic spend was going to be focused on sustainability investments, which would have lower returns. But we said when you put that together with growth investments and cost takeout investments, it delivered on our financial targets. And we got a positive feedback from the market. So once I think you can show we are making money and we're doing the right thing, I think if you start focusing on one over the other, is where you probably get into trouble.
Yeah, sure. Because of course it is you have done it quite well, as you have mentioned, but again it varies across sectors and depending on supply chain, etc., and many other factors. So we hope it can be applied across sectors and we all can be winners at the end of the day. And going forward, Garrett, the next thing I would like to ask you about careers within sustainability, especially for people, young people who are looking to embark in a, on, onto a career in sustainability, what would your advice be?
Well, if the decision has already been made to go into business, I think you need to consider what you enjoy as a person before you go down the road of sustainability. I think what are the things that excite you? What are the things that you can see yourself smiling that when you're doing it? And that can be very, very different to coming out with a sustainability degree at a university. So I think understanding yourself as a person, what you enjoy doing, then assuming, as you say, you want to get into business, you would then be saying, okay, what type of company do I want to work for? If you've done a degree in sustainability or a postgraduate in sustainability, it's likely you'll want to work in a progressive company. Because you could technically say, I want to work for a laggard and I want to change them, but coming in as a graduate and trying to change a big corporate would be quite a challenge. So assuming you want to get into a progressive company, I think that's where you have to do a bit of research. You have to understand how the leadership behave, what are the values that they've shown and they've demonstrated. I think also if you are making a serious choice on who you want to work for, you need to do a fair amount of balanced assessment of that company, because if you just go on social media, you will find whatever you want. And you need to be careful that you don't get confirmation bias, that you are just confirming what you already thought, or you hear a negative thing and you keep finding negative things, or you find only positive things and you only hear positive things. I think what you hopefully get through looking at what the leadership does, behaves, how they communicate via investment calls, via videos, public engagements, and then looking at third party sources to say, okay, is there anyone who rates these companies? What do they say about them? And then you do have the social media piece, but I think the social media piece has so much potential for incorrect information. I would say just having the discipline to do a proper assessment. And I often think if you can, rather than just reading, also look at videos, look at public engagements, including the leadership, and you'll then get a sense for the company. And actually talking to people who work for that company as well, if you can, that's a real important one. So, I'm looking at joining this company. I'd love to understand your views on what they do, how they do it, how leadership look at the area of sustainability. That's probably going to be the most impactful way you'll get a good reflection on what it would be like to do that. And hopefully you'll have career fairs across the university campuses, and sorry, not just university, just any hiring campaigns, and hopefully talking to someone who already works
Sure.
there will give a good feel for the
Yeah,
culture.
that's great advice from your side. So, Garrett, looking forward, as we all race towards 2030, any specific thing that you want to achieve as a as a person and a leader in sustainability, in terms of personal achievements, professional way? What is how does the way look forward, going forward, how does it look for you?
I think professionally, I feel if I've done my job properly, I won't have a job. So if you say by 2030, what would success look like? Success would look like I've moved on to another role because everybody lives, breathes, sustainability. They get the importance of the data, they get the importance of the reporting, they get the value from embracing it. They can communicate it appropriately to customers, investors, employees, local communities. That's what good looks like to me. And what I want to try and do is make sure that it's not reliant on a small group in a headquarters, but actually the company can embrace sustainability, which they already do. But I think sometimes, as I said at the start of the call, sustainability can get complex, exactly like you brought us down a you brought us down an avenue on forestry. So how do our employees understand that forestry is something to be proud of, not to be afraid of? How do we make sure from a water perspective, from an emissions perspective, from a community engagement perspective? And so I think it's trying to simplify what can be a complex topic. And in an ideal world, right back to the first sentence I said to your question, that by 2030, if I had moved on to a new role and the company were just embracing it, I think that could be a great sign of success. Maybe a little bit ambitious, but I think that would be a big positive. And certainly continuing to evidence that by doing the right thing, you can create value. So it's not just about doing the right thing because you have to. It's doing the right thing and making a business case. And I think continuing to try and drive that and demonstrate that is going to be the key focus for the next, well, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's a dream for everyone, and it's something we all need to achieve together. And thank you so much, Garrett, for all your advice and all your, insights. It was brilliant speaking to you. It was brilliant to see that how a FTSE 100 company can lead and show people that you can have a balance between profits and doing good. So thank you so much for all your insight and advice to the young people who are looking forward to having a career in sustainability. And we all look towards having a much fruitful journey moving forward. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of Big Time Sustainability. Please share, subscribe, and join us again next time.
If you are a changemaker or know someone who is making a big difference in their community or globally and should be on this show, please email us at podcast@thebigsynergy.org or visit www.thebigsynergy.org.